seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball discussion with me, Jared Morris, the host and co-founder of the Assembly Call, and featuring Alex Bozich, the founder and editor of Inside the Hall. Before we dive into this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink, a quick word from this week's sponsor to begin. This week's episode of Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by SeatGeek. You know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites really seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that really does make it easier than ever before for fans to buy and sell tickets. That's why SeatGeek is the first place I go to when I'm looking for tickets to a game or to a concert. And a big reason why is that SeatGeek does all the price comparison for me, and they'll do it for you too. They search multiple ticket sites, ensuring that you get the best possible deal. They do the work, you and I save the time and money, which sounds like a good deal to me. Best of all, listeners of Podcast on the Brink get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So here's how that works. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, all right, and go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code B-R-I-N-K today. Alrighty, and now this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. We are joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by the great Mike DeCourcy, college basketball analyst for the Sporting News and studio analyst for the Big Ten Network. Mike, great to have you back on the program.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, guys.
So, Mike, Indiana has now played 8 games and already beaten 2 of the consensus top 5 teams in America, the kinds of teams that you might see in an Elite Eight or a Final Four. However, the Hoosiers have also lost to a sub-100 team in Fort Wayne, the kind of team that you might see in a first or second round NCAA tournament matchup. So how do you reconcile these wild swings for Indiana, and do you think the Hoosiers can find the consistency to compete for another Big Ten title and advance past the Sweet 16?
You know, the Fort Wayne game was an odd game. I mean, you don't face that sort of environment, even though it's the kind of team you would play in a first round game, more likely, and possibly a second round if they played very well the way what's happened last year with Notre Dame, with the Stephen F. Austin, you might face that kind of team in a second game, but generally you don't have to travel on the road up your state, and I know there were a lot of Hoosiers fans there, but it was still kind of a home game for Fort Wayne, and you know I am less bothered by that result than some people. I'm not sure Indiana took the game, the players, I mean, took the game as seriously as they needed to early on. And then sometimes games can get away from you when the other team understands it has an opportunity that's not going to get very often. And they certainly, Fort Wayne certainly did a great job with that. And the third thing that doesn't really bother me about it is that OG Anunoby barely played. And if you're going to tell me that they get to the tournament and OG's not going to play, I'm going to say they're probably not going to reach their peak. He's too important of a player for them to have him absent. And I understand that the ankle issue is going to be there for a couple of games or so. But by March, if you want to win a championship, and I think that they're in the discussion for that, you have to have all your parts working. I mean, this is not a season in which you could get away without somebody that important. I'm not sure there are many of those. Last year might have been one. 2014 might have been one. But this is a year in which there are multiple strong teams. And Indiana is in that conversation.
Mike, from the North Carolina game specifically, going into that one, I questioned whether Indiana would be able to hang with North Carolina in the post. The offensive rebounding, obviously, is a huge strength of North Carolina. Indiana seemed to pretty much eliminate that. From watching that game in person, what were your biggest takeaways in terms of how Indiana was able to stop the Tar Heels in the paint? And also, just in general, how they were able to win that game. I think a lot of people going in with North Carolina coming off the win in Maui figured that was a game that was going to be really tough for Indiana to win, but they pretty much controlled throughout.
Oh, I think it started with the fact that the environment was unbelievable. I mean, it's going to Assembly Hall as a strong team, you're going to face one of the really difficult environments in all of college basketball. I'm not sure it's quite as bananas as Allen Fieldhouse is at its peak, but it's right there, and so it's hard to play there. And so Indiana understood going out there that they had to feed off that and create an atmosphere of difficulty for North Carolina. Indiana took great advantage of that. They went right after Carolina, never let them get into their comfort zone. And that was the most important element of why they were able to win. It would be different on a neutral floor. Indiana would have to bring all of its own intensity and wouldn't have the advantage of expecting that North Carolina would be flustered by the atmosphere. So I think from that standpoint, you learn that if you play with that much energy, especially on the defensive end, that you have a chance to disrupt the best teams. In a road circumstance or a neutral circumstance, you're not going to be able to count on them getting flustered. But you found out what the destructive potential of your defense really is. Indiana has a chance to be a really special defensive team. Because of the size that they have up front with Bryant, he's maybe not the greatest technical defender of all the big men in college basketball, but he plays really hard and he's tough to get the ball over, and he's got great length and he doesn't foul more than he can afford most of the time. You've got great defensive potential with Newkirk, who's such an extraordinary athlete and is really starting to understand how to attack the basketball. And OG's a lockdown guy. If you look at the matchups in that game, I kept thinking, why is OG not on Justin Jackson? Because that's the guy you got to stop. But the reality is that with this offensive lineup, and this is the lineup that they have to play to be their best on offense, with Blackman and Johnson and Newkirk, then OG's most of the time going to be guarding a power forward. And when the other team has a great stretch four, that's going to be a real weapon. In that game, when they played two bigs, in some ways you were probably not working at your full potential defensively, because OG is not going to very often be called on to defend a true big guy. Most of the time he's going to be called on to defend a stretch four, because more and more teams are playing that way. It's a rarity when you see someone like last year's Michigan State or this year's Carolina, where they have two true big guys. I thought that Indiana coped with that really well. But in the rare occasions when you do see that, if the other team has a three man like Justin Jackson, who's a real weapon, that might be something that eventually bothers the Hoosiers, and they might have to find a way around it.
The point guard situation is one that has been discussed, dissected. The graduation of Yogi Ferrell, I think a lot of people thought going into the season Indiana was going to have a tough time replacing. I'm not saying they have replaced him or gotten even close, but so far this three-guard lineup that you mentioned has been pretty successful for Indiana. Long-term, do you see that being something that can be sustained throughout the Big Ten season and into the NCAA tournament? Do you feel like they have enough in terms of a point guard to reach their potential?
There may be games when you're going to wish that there was one guy that you could give the ball to and he's going to make sure it goes to the right spot. Well, it wouldn't surprise me at all if there were several of those. But what they have to deal with. And they have done a really nice job of devising different offensive approaches that they can use that that emphasize the fact that they have three attacking ball handlers. All three of those guys can attack, can get into the lane, can create plays. Now, with James, when he attacks, he's most, you know, he's most adept at getting himself a shot. And it's fine because he's a better shooter than anybody's going to get the ball to. So if that's what his strength is, then fine. You know, Robert and Josh, those guys can both, they can both also create for others with great comfort. So the weave that they were using against Carolina really said, you don't know which of these guys is going to take you on any single play. So you have to be active guarding all of them. And it's not easy to defend. I thought that they did a really nice job with that. I'm a big believer in the point guard, and history says that if you don't have one, you're going to have to be a little fortunate, because you look over the course of the last 30 years, 35 years of NCAA basketball history, and almost every champion has that guy, even if he's not a great player. I mean, Talik Brown at UConn in 2004 was not truly a great player, but he could really guard. He got the ball where it needed to go. Jimmy Black with Carolina, I mean, the least talented of Carolina's players in 82 was the point guard, but he could get the ball where it needed to go, and he didn't make a lot of mistakes, and he guarded really well. Can you win with that guy? Yeah, you can win with a Josh Newkirk. I think that you can, because he's a great defender, and he does handle the ball well enough. He doesn't necessarily turn it over a ton. Those are the things that he has to do. But there, if you get to a possession late in a game against Kentucky, like they played last year, or another Carolina or Kansas or whoever, they're going to be slightly disadvantaged to where they would have been a year ago with Yogi, because they'd have known exactly who they wanted to have the ball. They would have had great trust that the ball would, that something good would happen with it. But that's the only way in which I think this team is lesser than last year's team. That and the injury absence of Colin Hartman, who I'm a huge fan of. But I think this team is better in a lot of ways than the team that won the league last year.
Mike, you mentioned James Blackman Jr., and he's been a guy who's been such a lightning rod, especially with IU fans, because he's been so productive offensively, and of course his defense has left a lot to be desired. And I feel like, you know, listening to you on the Big Ten Network, I wouldn't say that you've been a James Blackman Jr. defender, but you have always seemed to focus more on what he can do than what he can't, and what he does bring to the table. How would you assess his kind of growth and evolution now as a junior, as an upperclassman early this year?
Well, my position on James has always been that there's no reason he can't be a capable defender, because he's certainly athletic enough. You can't get to the places that he can go on offense and not be a good enough athlete to be a defender. And he's got good length, good size, so he should be a good defender. And I don't think he was a good defender in his 8 or 9 or however many games he played last year. I don't think he was nearly committed enough. But I didn't see any problem at that end last week against Carolina, and I think that to expect great defense in your first game of the season when they played Kansas, especially when the matchups were really challenging, I think that's a game you play to learn and to win, and you maybe aren't so worried about whether or not you're able to lock everybody down. But I thought he defended very well in the Carolina game. Again, he's not ever going to be Gary Payton, and it's not how he's wired. But he's got to do his job, and I think that he has, on balance, through the first 8 or 9 games this year, he has done his job, and I think that's what you ask from him. A guy who can produce like he can on offense, just phenomenal in the Kansas game, really good a lot of times in the Indiana game, maybe the biggest shot in the whole 40 minutes. I think that you can live with him not being your best defender. But he has to be better than awful, and I think that he understands that. I'm sure it was delivered to him by people, both inside the Indiana program and outside. And if he wants to play pro basketball, and his offense says that he can, he's not a good enough player to play in the NBA without doing an acceptable job on defense. So I think he understands that now, and I think he's starting to buy in, and it's just a question of getting comfort an understanding of what his full role is at that end. And in the end, I think he's going to do just fine.
Mike, you know, when we start talking about, you know, getting into Big Ten play and going deep in March, we all know the importance of having a deep and productive bench. And I thought last year Indiana's bench was huge. Guys like Nick Zeisloft and Max Bielefeldt stepped up time and again, especially on the road, it seemed, in Big Ten games, and kind of saved Indiana when they were really struggling. What are your thoughts on how Indiana's bench is evolving so far? You know, Deron Davis is starting to play more. Juwan Morgan seems to be, you know, rounding into form. And we saw a guy like Curtis Jones, you know, have a big game against Kansas. What are your thoughts on Indiana's bench? And do you think it will be good enough to take Indiana where obviously they have the potential to go?
Well, Morgan is a weapon. I mean, there are very few teams in college basketball that have a guy like that, that you can bring off the bench and he can do a lot of different things for you. He can guard 3 to 4 spots, maybe even 5, if he has to. He can make a shot. He can get to the rim. I think he's a really valuable reserve. Deron Davis, I liked when I saw him in preseason. I thought that he had a lot of potential. Would you like to have another experienced big body? You know, ideally, yeah, you would, if you could. And Colin probably would have been able to provide that. I mean, he played center a couple of years ago, so he probably would have been able to give that to you if he were available. Davis is going to have to be a very important player for them, and I think he's capable of giving them what they need there. And Curtis Jones, I think, is a real talent. And like you said, played great against Kansas. Didn't get as many minutes in the Carolina game. Understandable, but not somebody that they have to, you know, worry about a ton when they put him out there. I think he's a good athlete. He's a really good shooter. I think he's going to do very well for Indiana. So there may be, you know, if you designed the perfect team, you'd have one more big body that, you know, could just really, more than, as much as anything, give you some fouls. If you had to have him, give you some presence for when Thomas either got into some foul trouble or needed a blow or whatever. But I think right now you're making peace, if you're an Indiana fan, with the idea that that Davis will do fine as he goes along. He's going to get better and better. He's a real find for Indiana. And that, you know, if you have to go five smalls, if you want to call it that. I mean, Morgan's not that small, but he's not a power guy. If you have to go that way, then the other teams have to deal with that in your sense. I mean, they get somebody with a 6'11 center is going to have to figure out, you know, how do I go out and guard Juwan Morgan? I mean, that's not easy to do. So I think that against most teams, you probably have enough as long as you stay healthy.
Mike, looking at the Big Ten as a whole at this point, you know, the ACC won the Big Ten ACC Challenge pretty convincingly. I don't think anybody was surprised by that. But what I have been surprised by a little bit, I guess, to this point is, you know, besides Wisconsin, Purdue, Indiana, and, you know, Michigan had a couple of really nice wins up in Madison Square Garden. And I know Michigan State's played a brutal schedule and they've had their injury problems. But beyond that, to me, there hasn't really been any other teams in the Big Ten that have really stood out and looked like, you know, a contender to even, quite frankly, you know, make it past a round or two in the tournament. Is this kind of what you expected out of the league this year? I mean, you know, some really good teams at the top, but beyond that, maybe a little bit of a down year in the conference.
You know, I expected the first four to be really strong, but also I expected that Michigan State would have some trouble with over scheduling, so it may not look like they are, you know, the team that we'd hope they'd be. And then, of course, you also compound that with probably the worst injury problem in the league. You're looking at them being two big guys and having to rely more on a freshman than they ever expected, not just Miles Bridges, that they expected, but to have to rely as much on Nick Ward as they have. And it's been great for Ward, and I think by the end of the year, they might actually be better because Ward has had to play so much. Because Ward is a more talented player than Gavin Schilling. There's more things that he can do. He's not nearly the athlete, but he's a more talented player. And, you know, Ben Carter would have been great for them to have around because he's so experienced and he is a very capable player. And he's been in the tournament before and all of that. But I think the one player for Michigan State that I can definitively say is better because they played this schedule is Ward. And in the end, I think that'll pay off. Some of the other strong teams, Purdue just has been in all the wrong circumstances in a lot of ways. Playing Villanova in the Gavitt games, Villanova was just the wrong team to play at that point in the season. They got the wrong matchup in the challenge and the wrong venue. If they had played Louisville at home, might have been different. If they played any other team on the road, I think they could have had a better shot at it. But Louisville was just the wrong team for them. Until Purdue convinces me, I'm still going to believe that they're really a strong team. And then, of course, they played in their exempt tournament, and no one saw it, and they didn't get the strongest opposition in that environment. So even though they won it, there wasn't a great payoff for them. I still think that Purdue is a really strong team. Indiana has done, if it didn't have the Fort Wayne thing, I think there'd be more excitement about them. I've always thought that it was going to be those four and then everybody else fighting to get in the picture. And Ohio State maybe been a little better than I expected, so that's a positive. Maryland needs to get better defensively and has the potential to be a really good team. And I'll tell you what, something that people don't realize, I think Maryland's going to look great in at the end of the regular season, because their schedule by Big Ten standards is about as easy, quote unquote, as you can get in this league. They played those four teams that I talked about, Wisconsin, Purdue, Indiana, and Michigan State. They play those teams all one time, and three of those four games are at home. So Maryland's going to look really attractive. And I think that if they toughen up their defense a little, they could be a really good, solid team by the time we get to the tournament. And so I never really expected it to be a deep season. We've seen better play out of Minnesota and maybe a little bit better out of Penn State and a lot better out of Illinois in some venues than we expected. So on balance, it hasn't been a thrilling start for the Big Ten. But I think if you look at the way some of those teams in the middle and bottom are performing, it's encouraging that if they close the month well, that they could go into league play, maybe even as a 14-team league, in better shape than we expected. The top isn't maybe quite where one would have hoped, but some of those other teams, Northwestern's done most of what you wanted them to do. Minnesota's done way more than anybody thought about. Rutgers, in a lot of ways. I mean, Rutgers has been competitive. Even in the challenge game against Miami, a game that looked, on paper like a total layup for the Hurricanes, they had to fight a little bit. So I think that the league is in better shape 1-14 than we thought going in. But the 1-4 is maybe a little more dinged up than the league had hoped.
Mike, as we close up here, looking ahead at the rest of Indiana's non-conference schedule, there are three more sugary cupcakes that are still on the schedule, but also two tougher games against Butler and Louisville. How do you think Indiana matches up against those two teams?
Well, Louisville is a different bird altogether. And gosh, I can't believe I used that analogy given their nickname. But they defend so well. And this team is really, they're really tough mentally. They're agile. They're athletic. They for a fairly young team, they have a really strong understanding of what they need to do on defense to be special. So it's a tough game, but it's a great game for Indiana to play, because if you win it, it's another top 15 team on your, we already know Carolina, Kansas are going to be top 15 teams by the end of the year. And if you beat Louisville, that's a third. That would be a great resume builder for Indiana. And Indiana could really start to think about, hey, if we win the Big Ten, we're going to be a one seed. Not that you want the team thinking about that, but the fans could think about that. I think it's a good mental exercise for you. The Butler game is a tough one, because it's not one you want to lose. I mean, Butler's a very good basketball team, but they're not as advanced in terms of their development as Indiana is. They're the young guards. You want to believe that you should be able to to damage that, to attack that. They are really well coached. You're going to have to play really well to win. The advantage that you have in those two games is that neither is a road game. So you get a nice true test of where you stand as a team. I think Indiana going into both of those games ought to feel like they're games that, should win is a strong word, but certainly believe that if they play their best basketball and they're healthy, then there's no reason why they can't leave with a W.
He's at TSN Mike on Twitter. You should certainly be following him if you aren't already. Mike DeCourcy, thank you so much for joining us on Podcast on the Brink.
Always a pleasure, guys. You guys do a terrific job.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.